It's Monday at 7 o'clock, March 10th. I can't believe it's March. If I can ask for the roll call, please.
Trustee Bochner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here. But can I ask you to please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. See if Jesus is coming. Okay. All right. So we'll, no citizens comment? Okay, very good. So, start with the elected officials and comments, maybe with you, Bob. Give Lisa a chance to get here.
I have nothing tonight.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks. The only thing I have is to pass along a question from a constituent who asked the status of the leaf blower ordinance.
Yeah.
Sure.
I can answer it too.
The Sustainability Commission had taken the feedback from the Village Board from a few months ago now and was preparing to bring that subject back for discussion and a vote. So we just are really looking at a time to schedule a presentation by Seth and the Sustainability Co-Chairs. We don't have that scheduled at this time, but something we want to bring forward in the near future.
Great. Okay. I think maybe the warm weather caused that question to come to me in anticipation of the buzzing of leaf blowers. Thanks.
No more.
Yeah. Nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay. Rez?
No comments today.
All right. Erica?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Just want to acknowledge that I attended the grand opening of Black Father a couple of weeks ago, a cafe that has just opened here in River Forest. Really excited about it. Wonderful pastries. Delightfully, like they taste so good, and they are most of them gluten-free and sugar-free as well. So the coffee and the teas are wonderful, and they've got great hours, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's small business owned by a couple who lives in Forest Park. So just really glad to have them in the community and hope everybody goes there.
Yeah, great.
Erica, is that at the, what was the schoolhouse?
Yeah. So it was a commercial, small batch commercial kitchen, and like you could have, you know, birthday parties and things like that.
Yeah.
But they've
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they have just,
it was the sugar beet.
Is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a great job.
Thanks.
It was the old sugar beet kitchen, Katie.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, thanks, Erica. That is a great business for us. So I don't have much other.
Yep. Can the record reflect that Trustee Gillis came?
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you.
For the record.
Yep, great. We saw you. No worries. No worries. It happens. So I have nothing really major to report other than got good news. And it's been really great news. Today we released, and I think all the village board knows this, that our police chief, Jim O'Shea, has announced his retirement. That's good news for him. That's bad news for us, right. but we really wish him really well. We've got a lot of things that we're going to do for him. We're going to have an official, you know, retirement kind of get together, send off recognition. But the release did go out this afternoon. I think, Bob, you should get a copy of the release if you haven't. We'll give you one. But it's a page and a half of, we had to pare it down from three pages. There's so much that Jim did, and he was such a big influence in our community for over 30 years. So, Jim, there's going to be a lot more accolades coming your way, but I just wanted to make sure that the public and now knows that this is your official retirement, and we're happy for you and your family. We're looking forward to continuing your initiatives that you've given to us over the course of, you know, the many years that you've been the chief. So, and then of course we'll announce your replacement soon, but we didn't want to mix it up with your retirement. So congratulations. And then you'll hear more on that. So that's all I have. So next up, we will ask for a motion for the consent agenda A through H.
Make a motion to approve consent agenda items A through H.
Can I ask that A be removed from the consent agenda?
Yeah, sure. A and E? B, I think you said.
No, A.
A, yeah. And B?
Just the minutes.
Just
the minutes. Okay. So that I can recuse myself from voting.
Oh, no worries. Yep. Okay. Yep. We'll remove A. Okay. So then we've got B through H.
Bob, do you want to renew your motion B through?
Now that Erica mentions it, I can't do it because I can't vote on A either.
Okay. So then, okay, I will move. All right. I will move to approve the consent agenda from B through H.
No, you will.
And I will second.
All righty.
Okay.
All right. So then any questions regarding those items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the vote.
Consent agenda item B, administration department report. C, monthly department reports. D, February 2025 financial report. E, accounts payable February 2025, $1,632,681.83. F, approval of motor fuel tax resolution 2025, maintenance of streets and highways. G, award of contract 2025 street improvement project, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $495,218.63. H, award of contract fire department renovation, Futurity 19, $34,276. Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
All right. So then if I can get a motion for A.
So I move to approve 5A Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes February
24, 2025. Second.
Any questions regarding that item? Hearing none, I will ask the clerk to take the vote, please.
Trustee O'Connell.
Pass.
Abstain. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Well, acknowledging that I wasn't at the last meeting either, I'll approve it to the best of my knowledge.
That's okay.
Which is perfectly fine.
That's perfectly fine. Thank you.
And that passes. It does not need a fourth affirmative vote because it's just the minutes. So yeah. That passes. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I know. All right. But it is what it is. And so that's fine. Okay. We will go on to the seventh item. There's no action here. It's just economic development. I guess, Jessica, you're going to be leading this. Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So tonight I would like to introduce you to the EDC's recent project. It's called, excuse me, the TIF Small Business Improvement Grant Program. Right now, we might be coming up with something a little jazzier before we get it approved. So this is something that the EDC has been working on since the fall, and we're quite excited about the different possibilities to support our business community. So the idea was originally introduced in September by Administrator Walsh. The EDC agreed that the grant program can provide significant benefits to businesses within the TIF districts. Staff developed a structured proposal that guided discussions on the objectives, eligibility, funding, and review processes. And that's what I'm going to walk you through this evening. The memo that you were provided highlights the final decisions that were made by the commission. So the primary goal is to preserve the historical integrity of buildings while offering financial aid to small businesses. By doing so, the aim is to improve commercial properties and then also to attract more customers and tenants to the existing businesses. To qualify, applicants must comply with all village codes and be located within the designated TIF districts. The TIF districts we're talking about tonight are the Madison Avenue TIF district and the North Avenue TIF. Residential properties are not eligible in this proposal. So there's a broad range of projects that are eligible under this program, focusing on improving the aesthetics, the accessibility, and sustainability. These enhancements are intended to contribute to the commercial district's appeal and vibrancy. These listed here are just a few of them. A more complete list is provided for you in the memo and then also in the program that was provided to you. The program does not cover routine maintenance, professional fees, or interior-only work. The focus remains on exterior enhancements that are visible from public spaces. Funding will come from the TIF district resources. Each grant will cover up to 50% of eligible costs with a maximum award of $5,000 per project. And then within each TIF, so within the North Avenue and within the Madison Avenue or Madison Street, would be budgeted a maximum of $50,000 this first year. Discussions are ongoing about potential penalties for businesses that relocate shortly after receiving funding. That's one of the discussion points I'm hoping you all might weigh in on today. And then once we have this discussion this evening, we're going to incorporate the feedback and then make any revisions and then hopefully provide it for approval at the next March meeting. Once this is officially approved, there will be a website where applicants will be able to find more information, but applicants will submit detailed project plans, cost estimates, and photos of their property. Staff will evaluate the applications based on criteria such as community impact and alignment with program goals, and then the village administrator will have final approval authority. The EDC did seek input from our local businesses, and the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Business owners appreciated the focus on accessibility and sustainable improvements. So at this point, I've got a couple questions to kind of kick off any discussion we might have. First of all, what do you think about the list of projects? Anything you'd like to add or remove from eligible or ineligible projects? Right now, approval is with staff. Would you like to modify that? And also, do you agree with the funding levels?
Okay. Then I have some questions, if you don't mind. First of all, for example, the building permits and related expenses, is mm-hmm. there a reason why they're ineligible? I mean, and maybe it's... The funding it's not federally funded, right? It's not restricted to federal funds. So if we're going to be allowing for these type of grants up to $5,000, why are we excluding the building permits? Because if we were going to make it ineligible, we're going to get it back if they're going to use it, right? So we're never losing the building permit fees.
That's correct. Well, the TIF funds are not truly the village's funds, right? They belong to the TIF. They're intended to be reimbursed or reinvested in the community. Right. And building permit funds do fund village activities.
Okay.
So it would not exactly be a in a one lot. Door and out the other. Right.
Okay. That's fair.
The intention was that the applicant would still have a significant investment in the program. Hence why there's kind of a discussion about penalties. Mm-hmm. We're trying to make sure that these business owners are in a position where they will feel supported by the community and we want to keep them here and they feel that excitement from the village. But also the phrase frequently was have some skin in the game. So by making sure that they're participating in the building permit fees, that was one way that we were looking to do that.
Perfect. That answered that question. So I'm also looking, I saw from the earlier slide that really the point of this is try to provide for or related to improvements on the. So I can see like the fees for professional services and the acquisition of land or buildings, but, and I am not nickel and diming. So, for example, I see the construction of decorative masonry walls are eligible, but how about like the flat installations or repairs? Why wouldn't that be part if that's an improvement? Or is there a reason why that, you know, the other items that were found ineligible, is there a theme that I'm missing? Why are we excluding the other items?
And so,
again, I'm talking about items that relate to either the construction improvement on the actual building itself. So I can understand interior signage. One can argue that's really not part of the actual building, but the construction of the roof, upgrades to utility services, water, sewer connections, is that because it's not part of the building or?
I'm assuming it's because it's not visible. And it seems like these are mostly visible.
So more cosmetic, like so you can see? Yeah. Or
that was certainly part of the discussion was that it would be something that kind of adds to the vibrancy of the corridor. Now, that's subject to discussion. Now, those obviously are costs that would help businesses roof repair if it's leaking, or they might make it a more appealing thing for a landlord to have a tenant move into the space. The focus and kind of direction from the EDC, which is obviously subject to village board feedback, was more of the visible frontage to kind of revitalize that. So and that was the thought process there.
And so the idea, for example, excluding the sewer system because no one sees it and it's more cosmetic, people will be able to see it and there'll be more money for those type of improvements that people can see where their money's going to. So
correct. That's kind of the thought process, right?
Okay. Yeah. No, it's not a bad thing. So I was trying to first thing, well, if we're helping businesses, why not help on this water sewer? We're capping it at 5,000. So that's the only reason I was asking why we were, you know, limiting it to this. That's all.
Okay. So would it be fair to say we're talking about the facade? Okay.
Yeah. So now I see.
Okay. So one of the things, on the code, There's the enhancement of accessibility. I mean, that gets into a tricky thing. So these people would all have to be ADA accessible and they couldn't put money towards bringing them up to the standard. Is that, am I?
No, I believe the intention was if they were not at the current ADA standards, this grant could be used to help get them there.
Could they go beyond the ADA standard?
Depending on the situation, I think so.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's ADA standard that most businesses go above and beyond.
So I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I think that's part of the level playing field to get into the game is you've got to have your building accessible. That's the law. Okay. So why should we pay for that to bring it up to accessibility? I think to John's point, we talked about this many, many years ago on the EDC, is this was really a facade rebate program.
Yeah, but it's bringing more traffic.
I understand that.
More people through the door. It'll make it so that more people will want to visit that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Our code enforcement officer does not address ADA and goes around and looks at that, correct?
Well, I think so. Hope so.
I believe if he would receive a complaint, it's you typically property inspections like that are complaint driven. So if you received a complaint that someone was concerned with and they reported it, then he would go out to search, to look for it. But if we became aware of a failure to comply, the bare minimum, if the project required it, would be to bring them into compliance. And then whether or not this $5,000 would be then, okay, now it's above and beyond. Now we are talking about exterior lighting or something along that line.
But on Bob's point, and I'm not sure if it was Erica's point too, when we do, let's assume someone's building a new building or whatever, don't we look to see if it's ADA compliant?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So when someone submits building plans, yes.
Okay.
One of the things that they check off is insurance with the current building codes, which would include ADA. But if someone just came in and said, I want to put up a sign, which has nothing to do with ADA compliance, that wouldn't necessarily be under that course of review.
I've got a couple of questions. So I don't know how far you've thought through this, but did you say there was $50K for each TIF?
Yes.
Okay. Do you anticipate for each of those pools of grant money, would there be a deadline to like applying for it?
So the funds we're going to be putting into the budget effective in the fiscal 26 fiscal year, so May 1st. And then we were going to watch this first year and see how a couple of things process through, one of them being a rolling application. So one of the thresholds to close applications would be hitting that $50,000 limit in that particular district. So the at least in the first year, we think that it would make sense to leave it open and wait to see how many people. And if we only spend $25,000 the first year, then technically it wouldn't close.
Okay. And can you remind me of for each TIF, how much money we've got in each TIF so far and what year we are in each TIF?
Don't have those numbers in front of you, but I could get them. Are they in the financial report?
They, yeah.
But, I mean, you want cash balances?
How much money is in each TIF right now?
Right.
So if we're asking for 50K, is there only 50K?
No,
there's more.
300.
It's over a million each.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you know the year for each TIF where we're at?
The Madison Street TIF began in 2016, I believe, and the North Avenue TIF began in 2018.
Correct. Okay, so close to each other.
Mm. Thank you.
Do we know how many businesses in each TIF, like right now, approximately would be eligible?
I have that figure at my desk. I'm so sorry I didn't bring that.
Do you remember?
I want to say it's when we looked at the number and we said 5,000 and a total of 50, that would be 10, right? Would max out. And I want to say that it was right around there, between 10 and 15.
I think it was a little bit higher than that in total. Maybe. I think it was between 40 and 50 total because we're considering commercial property owners and different tenants within that too. Oh.
Yeah, that answers part of my question, too, because a lot of the small business owners are tenants of a commercial building. And I'm wondering if, like, you've connected with the commercial building owners themselves to try to do something that would be, like,
unified.
Unified things.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
for
point.
Each building.
So we did consider that. And that's why in the program document, it's written that it's business owners and property owners within the TIF. So if one property owner owns a suite of four in one building, he can apply for one grant, which would be $5,000, or each of those four tenants could apply for $5,000 and then potentially have $20,000 of qualifying expenses and therefore unify the front of that building or build a monument sign or something along those lines.
So, if a commercial property owner wanted to be able to let's just say, like, get more funds because they're doing more work to an entire building with four different tenants in it, he would or she would or they would have to maybe connect with those tenants and have each of them apply for a grant.
That's how it's currently structured. Again, there was a lot of conversation about what made more sense.
Yeah.
Do you allow the business owner to apply or do you allow the property owner to apply?
Right.
Since this was the first year, we thought that it made sense to appeal in the way that I described, to see how it went. And then if we got questions from property owners saying, well, I need $25,000 myself, you know, based on what they want to do, that is something we would bring forward to the commission again, to the village administrator again, to the village board, and then see if that's a change we were willing to entertain.
I think it would be, I don't know how you could get the outside of a building, a grant to a tenant handling the outside of their building, really not responsible for it.
Yeah,
I was going to get there too.
I mean, maybe signage, but...
In the application, we do have an acknowledgement that's required for all tenants that are renting the space that they have their property owner's consent and acceptance signing off. So there has to be communication between the property owner and the landlord.
So on that, following up with that, I apologize, Erica, but so let's assume there's a owner and he has four tenants. So that's 20. What if there's another owner only has one or two? Then he's going to get less, right, to fix this building that he's renting out, sort of. So are you going to get hit with, is that fair? How come so-and-so that has four tenants is eligible for $20,000? I'm only eligible for 10. And
so
I have the same building and I have the same cost, or I can improve my building just as nice.
It's a fair question.
Yeah.
We were hoping to kind of mitigate that by addressing the applications based on parcel or PIN numbers.
Okay.
So yes, unfortunately there will be the owner who owns three units versus the owner who owns five. And then that's something that I'm sure we can bring back and discuss at the commission level. Once we see what the actual interest looks like.
Okay. So thank you, Erica.
So what happens, for example, someone brought up signage. Somebody wants to put a sign up. Does that go through a design review process? Because, again, you know, we could have a building with four units and have four different signs. It just looks crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there design review or anything involved in this? Or is it on a case-by-case basis?
It's on a case-by-case basis. A new sign will be subject to our sign code. Mm-hmm. So our building department would review those plans now in terms of trying to make them uniform or play off of each other hasn't been something that we have necessarily considered as part of this program. Now there's some plan development conditions that have specific things around that. Town center is subject to that. But that hasn't really come up as part of the discussion, but I think that's worth considering, you know, as part of the evaluation process.
I guess that was one of my questions too, because when I think about like this TIF district, you know, both of these, the idea that we want to have some sort of unified, like, you know, upgrade standards for what things look like. Do we want them to have a certain look or not? You know, do they, you know, I remember doing stuff within like River Forks or Lake Forest, and like McDonald's, you know, couldn't put the arches. So you know what I'm talking about, but like, you know, is there some, so that we are bringing we are leveling up these streets that we want to?
I think that's a good point. I do know that there would likely be feedback from business owners that they want to stand out and they have their own branding that they're subject to and they want to kind of promote that. We've gotten feedback in a different scenario where they want their certain color thing that doesn't match. So that's kind of the push and pull there. I think in this case, in our case, with so many different properties that have been around for some time, it's difficult to get kind of a uniform across the whole corridor of Madison or North. I think in the case of some of the multi-unit strip malls and things like that, that makes a lot of sense to me, but in terms of across the whole corridor, I think would be a difficult.
I could see across the whole corridor. I'm just wondering, if we've been thoughtful about that as we're thinking through the TIF, and what do we want this neighborhood essentially to look like there? You know, are we going for something in particular?
I think we're looking for sites to be occupied, I think, is and upgraded. So generally, I don't think we got into the specific of achieving like a larger vision in with this program, because these are kind of smaller scale projects that are being promoted or incentivized here.
Part of my concern, I'm not saying that, you know, this isn't good, but would be like we do something like this and then we decide we want to have that, and then maybe some of this work doesn't
mesh with that.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
The sign code does have the color that pops out to me is white. There, at the time that the sign code was approved, it was they wanted the signs that lit up to all be white. So I mean, and I know within that paragraph there's a little bit more description in there about what the signs are. I emailed you earlier this year asking about a sign for a particular business because they wanted fluorescent lighting, and that is actually, or they wanted faux fluorescent lighting, and that is actively crossed out in our sign code. So I mean, we could potentially have a larger conversation about re-looking at the sign code at a future date. I think that, you know, it's something we can keep in mind. If you'd like, maybe for this, if you're okay with allowing this program to go forward, if someone does have a sign proposal, maybe that is something we bring to you separately. Whereas maybe the village administrator might be allowed to approve the other applications, if that's comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally, yes. I think I'm asking a broader question is of what we're envisioning for these TIFs now that we're starting to lay out a little bit of money, right? Like to directly to some of these businesses. Because I can see, besides this, I know we've talked about like residential beautification in the past too. And so just as we're starting to do this, it would be great to like understand what we're going towards as we're spending this money.
I guess I think it's a great idea. I'm just trying to figure out what it is that you're asking, because I think it's us who probably needs to make that decision.
Right. But like, where are we with it, basically? Right. Like we haven't really talked too much about that.
Yeah.
So like, are there decisions that we need to make or start making? One of the reasons why I asked, like 2016, that's nearly 10 years into the TIF on Madison. Right. And
yeah.
So that means we have 13 years left, which sounds like a lot, but
it isn't.
Yeah.
Right. It's not.
To do certain things, you know, we want to make it unified. We want to try to, like, what type of properties do we want to come in, or, you know, like business owners or, are we looking for, are we continuing to look for small businesses in these, you know, just.
I think it's also important to communicate that to those that would be applying, because, you know, it's more challenging once you receive an application to say, no, that doesn't fit with us.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, we know it when we see it, but it's really better to explain to them in advance that, no, we're not looking for gargoyles, you know?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what that exactly would look like in terms of spelling it out. I think it's definitely a worthwhile exercise to.
I think what Erica is saying is we haven't spelled it out. So if there's a theme that we're thinking of for both of the TIF areas, that's where she's saying maybe we
such
think
as,
about
like
yeah.
what? I mean, I'm trying to.
No. Well, I guess.
I know you don't have it, but I'm just like an idea.
I'm just saying, when the brickwork, does it all have to be reddish? Does it all have to be, make sure, you know, that the windows, do they all have to be of a certain type?
Right.
I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm saying something along the lines that are we going to be thinking of, or does everybody put up whatever they want?
But also, do we have a vision for each of these neighborhoods? Is there, we have asked for lots of TIF money for over 23 years. What are we looking to do with that?
Well, we do have our their comprehensive plan that does lay out kind of what the buildings should look like and how it looks like. I'm not quite sure it goes down to the brick color.
Yeah.
But it
I threw that out.
A good analogy. Yeah. But I mean, we do have. I mean, and that goes into even the sign ordinance and the, other things.
I guess, how much, if we are not exactly happy with what is there today, where are we looking to level up to then?
Right. Well, I think the plan, the comprehensive plan starts that conversation. I'm not quite sure that it ends there. I mean,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say this. And you raise a valid point.
Yeah,
I totally agree with the point. Yeah. But I'm now just throwing out is $5,000 is really not going to make a lot of difference. It might help the small business owner. I'm not saying that. But in terms of fixing up the outside of a property, I'm not sure if you're going to make that huge change that's really going to reflect where I'm thinking you're going, but you're going something, a bigger picture of. And so what I'm saying is that I think if they're really going to start developing something bigger, I think that's going to go through our normal processes. And I think we will be able to now start thinking about it more seriously. Not that we're not serious now, but I think it is, you raise a good point. We ought to be thinking about that because it is coming around the corner. I'm not dismissing your point.
Well, I'm not dismissing these grants. But also what's happening with the TIF at the same time. And should we be thinking through some stuff? And you were going to say
that. So this was kind of born out of the Economic Development Commission asking about vacant properties on all of our commercial corridors, asking staff to kind of get an inventory of them and working through that. And how do we fill those spaces? So I think that was the problem that was there. There's several vacant spaces on both of those corridors. What's a kind of low hanging fruit that we can do to kind of help maybe push a small project over the edge? If a tenant's looking at a site on North Avenue and River Forest, and they're looking at somewhere else, and they know that there's TIF money here. We've gotten questions about, there's TIF here. What does this mean? Mm-hmm. And we can go into redevelopment agreements on any level of things, but this is a program that would be kind of a starting point that might make us a little bit more competitive. So it admittedly is kind of modest in its goals rather than trying to treat the whole thing, because I think the Economic Development Commission, was having conversations about different regulations and looking at the Madison Street property and things like that, and kind of losing sight of the properties that are already out there that aren't as likely to be grandly redeveloped. So I'm trying to address that on a parallel track. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came from.
And I think that is really good. And if we can help get vacant space rented or moved into, that's great. But I do think maybe, going through the process of just beginning to have more discussions around the TIF and becoming clearer as a board with that. Going back to then the grants and then potentially penalties for the businesses. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there shouldn't be any, but if a business has put money into work on the facade or, and then they leave, that work is still there. Mm-hmm. So even though they leave, we still gain a benefit from that.
Yes, that was one of the considerations. The point was, we didn't want a business to come into town. I mean, it seems like an unlikely scenario. Come into town, decide they need to improve their building, apply for the grant, do the work, and then leave. It does seem unlikely. When we were doing research for the program, there were a number of communities that did have different clawback provisions, sort of like a forgivable loan over time. One proposal was a three-year forgivable loan with 33% being more being more forgiven each year. So the first year, if they left, they would pay 100% back and so on. So the fourth year, where if they left, they would pay zero. It was just a, it was something that, like I said, we saw in other examples in other communities. This version that I gave you, we did not present you with the penalties because at the end of the discussion, the EDC decided that if a business should fold, we didn't want to be one more debtor. And so we didn't want to make it difficult for the business.
That's kind of where I was going to, because I mean, I've definitely seen businesses that, you know, come in looking to make, and then after a couple of years, just haven't been able to.
Right. So, and then, like you said, the improvements will still be behind. So, but I just wanted to, like, full disclosure, let you know this was part of the conversation in case you had different thoughts on it.
And I think part of that too is, as proposed, there we're splitting the cost with the applicant, so they have some of that skin in the game that Jessica referenced. But there was conversation where that might not be the case, and if it's just going to be $5,000 for a sign, then we don't have as much of a consider some type of way to hold them accountable if they were to try and take advantage of the program. I think it's unlikely, but so I think that's why it wasn't incorporated or included in what's proposed, but wanted to at least bring up that topic for discussion.
I suppose they could take their exterior sign with them.
Yeah.
It's true.
True. Not the tuck pointing.
Right.
Okay. I have somewhat of a fundamental question that came to my mind when I first saw this. And this has got to be the first time we've done something like this with TIF funds.
Mm-hmm.
Have we looked to, are we certain that this is appropriate use of our taxpayer TIF funds?
Yes, legally you can use facade improvement programs like this and fund them with TIF money.
In our redevelopment plans that were approved as part of the creation of the TIF districts describe investing in private businesses to kind of help with that type of thing. So yes, that is spelled out.
Okay, great. And I think that you sort of answered another question that I had, which was, you know, why these two TIF areas and not another TIF area in our village. And I think you were saying that it's because we have more vacancies in these areas.
So the village only has two active TIF districts, Madison Street and North Avenue. So those are the only under this. So that's what this will be limited to, where there's existing active TIF districts.
Okay. And then, so $50K a year per TIF district for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have, was there any more discussion about what would happen in the future years after that?
Based on, like, once we got to budget season, January, February, we would look to see what the application rate was and what businesses were doing, and then reevaluate at that point. So the EDC would take up the conversation again with the idea of saying, okay, is 50 too much? Is it not enough? Is 5,000 per project appropriate? As Rosie said, it's a well-funded, both TIFs are well-funded right now. And so this is something we wanted to be modest in the beginning, and then hopefully we can grow as more of these businesses take advantage of it.
Could I apply multiple times year after year if I was a property or business owner?
We did say one application per year, but depending on the project, we would be open to it. Again, from more of a business owner and a tenant perspective. So if we have one property owner that owns in both North and Madison, which I don't believe exists right now, you could apply in both. If you happen to own two different properties in North Avenue at two different addresses, you could apply at both. And then if you are, I think it got a little hazy with the property owner applying for one particular suite in that building. If two allocations would apply at that point.
But I think what you're saying is that the same person person, whether it's the owner or the renter or the business, mm-hmm. could apply year after year? Is it what's being envisioned?
I believe that the discussion ended that it was possible, however unlikely, to happen more than probably 2 years in a row, based on what we do know of who owns those buildings. But I think we were open to it.
Yep.
I right. can foresee one building owner having two or three projects.
Yes. Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. deciding to do one project 1 year, another project another year, another project.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
On the program guidelines, I'm just trying to understand how it actually physically would work yep. logistically and with a timeline. So they apply, they get approved, they do the project and pay for it themselves. And this goes to them as a reimbursement after the project is finished.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. There was some discussion about providing it up front, depending on what it is, but that's where we landed. That's certainly up for discussion, but that is how our other reimbursement programs have worked for like lead service replacement and other projects.
Mm-hmm. I have a question in terms of if you think about we're trying to make, if a company or business, you know, comes and goes, right? To your point, the one thing would be the sign. Why are we not making a sign not eligible?
Because I think we were trying to be as broad and inclusive as possible. And I think the idea was that if a company is coming here and buying a sign, then they're probably going to stick around for at least 3 years. And so that would get past that forgivable loan period that we talked about but didn't incorporate. But also, sometimes the sign needs to be replaced more than the sidewalk needs to be replaced in front of it. I think we were just trying to be inclusive.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Good discussion. A lot of good stuff. It sounds generally everyone's kind of an acceptance to what I think the EDC and then the staff mm-hmm. has come up with. Anything that glaring you'd like to see out of it other than what we've discussed? And I think, Erica, you brought some good points up in terms of our long-term vision is.
Right. Okay. Sounded like there was some thought that maybe we should consider additional projects that might not be facade or visible.
Physically, is it? Yeah, sorry.
Mm. Yeah, you brought that up, Rez. I mean, yep. I mean, to your, I think Erica.
I think stuff that's facade facing is appropriate.
But anything above that.
I guess the question was, is any like a roofing or...
Well,
air conditioning or
no,
I you know, again, I think it's a facade rebate. I think it's to draw people to it. There. You know, it's great to have a good sewer working and everything, but you know, I also think the intent is you got to have some greens fees, and your greens fees are you run a good business. And
yeah, I just wanted to confirm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else for, great. Yeah. Glad you guys had that discussion. I mean, thank you.
To Erica's point, I mean, I think there's several multi-tenanted buildings in town mm-hmm. that if a tenant came in, I guess that would be the opportunity that I'd want to get the owner in and see if there's something we can do to expand mm-hmm. the program to take care of, you know, the make rest. It all look uniform to your point, mm-hmm. you know.
Agreed.
So we do have a rough idea of how we plan to advertise. We have the business license database that we'll be using to email and I was thinking about using a postcard, one of these quarters, mm-hmm. To advertise when the grant program is live to notify the business owners in town that this is available. We also, like I said, we have their email addresses, so we'll send a personal invitation to come in and apply, probably toss it in the newsletter a few times, social media. So there's even been discussions of more boots on the ground, putting a flyer in each of these businesses. So we're hoping to, we are hoping to use that point of contact by the applicant to reach the property owner so that we can have that broader conversation, because absolutely it would benefit everyone to have the whole building upgraded and not just one suite.
I think maybe doing something like open houses too, so that businesses and property owners could come in, mm-hmm. hear about it, what would make an application successful, and then you could start to hear some questions that they have too, mm-hmm. That would, you know, help for either the next round or whatever, you know.
Thank you. That actually came up recently. So we have that in our mind, just not totally sketched out yet.
Yeah. Good point.
Okay. Any other questions? Did you want me to bring anything back specifically to EDC to adjust before your final approval?
What sits with me is just that the goal is to improve it visually from the outside. So mm-hmm. if that's the driving goal, we should keep that in mind when we're considering what's going to be approved and what's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's a sign that can be taken with them or an awnings that can be go with them, maybe that doesn't really achieve the goal.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Just to think that through.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we addressed the second question.
Yeah. No, we have not. But, okay. I mean, did anybody have an issue with that staff? I don't.
Okay.
No, I think that they basically have, I mean, the vision is we will have, you know, we'll have approval authority. And if anything needs to come to the board, we'll bring it to the board. So I think it's a yin yang, which is perfect.
I mean, if there's anything unusual.
Acceptable. Yep.
Yes. Typically, these are $5,000 reimbursements. So they'll come to you through the record of bills, but they wouldn't be spelled out because they're well within the village administrator's approval authority. But I will be providing a list to the EDC as we go forward. So I can certainly include that in your board packet as well to make sure you're aware of the awards.
Oh, that'd be nice to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of talked about the funding levels already. It sounded like five and see where
start
we go.
Five.
Yeah.
Is your plan to loop the Chamber of Commerce in on this?
They have been in it every step of the way. Yeah. So yes.
Okay.
And we hope to tap into their resources to help push it out too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Invisible.
Are we also, this is unrelated somewhat. Are we also offering new businesses a 1-year membership to the chamber? Did
it's
I read that
months.
Somewhere? 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And yes, we're still doing that.
Okay. Thanks.
Invisible Park. Mm-hmm. We should loop them in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Thanks. Very good. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
And Matt and the EDC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Next up is our new business. And this is, I don't know why we call it new business. It's kind of, we've been talking about traffic and safety forever. But okay.
Ongoing business.
It's ongoing business. Maybe unfinished business. Who knows?
It's a Jack B. and Black business ago.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
So as it was mentioned a little bit, we've gotten a lot of feedback from various community meetings regarding, you know, traffic and how it's handled here at the village. So today, here's the clicker. Okay. So today we will be going through what we have been doing just as a village on various traffic issues, but then also a couple larger scale projects that we have coming up in the future. There we go. Okay, so today we'll be going over the existing traffic study. I did not put all these transitions in, I swear. the Traffic Safety Commission, the Traffic Calming Toolbox, and project overviews for Washington, Thatcher, and Lake Street. Because we have all these various points in the discussion, if there are any questions or comments as we go through the different individual sections, please bring them up, because I know once we get towards the end, jumping all the way to the back or the front might be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So first, let's go with the village-wide traffic study. So in 2023, the village engaged a professional engineering firm to do a village-wide traffic study. This study was presented to the Traffic Safety Commission September 20th, 2023, and was finalized November 13th, 2023. So the primary objective of this study was to offer a comprehensive analysis of current traffic conditions in the village. The overarching aim was to identify high-risk locations, assess the efficiency of existing traffic controls, and offer actionable recommendations for both immediate and long-term improvements. Community engagement played a pivotal role in shaping the objectives and outcomes of the study, Early in the project, a survey was sent out and used to gather resident feedback on various traffic and safety topics. The survey served multiple purposes. It helped identify focus areas and provided valuable insights to resident concerns. The survey results revealed a strong community interest in specific traffic calming measures, speed control, and pedestrian safety. This feedback was instrumental in refining the recommendations for the improvements. Additionally, the survey provided valuable insights into the community's acceptance of various countermeasures, ensuring that the proposed solutions are not only effective, but are closely aligned with the needs and preferences of the village residents. The resident feedback gathered through the survey was a cornerstone for the study. It created a more community-centric approach, ensuring that the recommendations were not only data-driven, but also aligned with the values of the community. This dual focus ensures that the study's outcomes are not just technically sound, but also socially acceptable for the community, thereby increasing the likelihood for successful implementation. So as part of the village-wide traffic study, it did also take into account the Safe Routes to School that was done in 2019. That Safe Routes to School identified just how children migrate to the schools. It created various new traffic safety measures, including stop signs, striped crosswalks, just to ensure that children go to school safely. Additionally, the traffic study did take into account the village-wide bike plan that also provided the routes throughout the village, safe bike routes. Additionally, as part of the village-wide traffic study, we did a detailed review of Washington and Thatcher, and also the creation of the traffic calming toolbox, which is what we typically use for the Traffic Safety Commission and staff uses. So the Traffic Safety Commission and the Traffic Calming Toolbox. So as you all know, Traffic Safety Commission is a volunteer commission that serves in an advisory capacity to the village board. It's comprised of 7 members who are residents of the village. The function of the Traffic Safety Commission is to review transit, parking, and potentially hazardous traffic safety matters that has been referred to the village. So, and the Traffic Calming Toolbox uses accepted industry standards and regulatory standards, and the traffic consultant prepared this to inform and guide the decision-making process for the Traffic Safety Commission and staff. The commission uses this when determining whether or not to, I guess, recommend the use of new traffic calming measures. Mm-hmm. So let's get into the Traffic Calming Toolbox. There's a multifaceted approach when a concern comes in to the village, either to staff first or just comes to a Traffic Safety Commission meeting. It comes up. We go through data collection, scoring matrix, the improvement matrix, and then the recommendation to the village board. So this was one of the standout components to the village-wide traffic study. This toolbox is a compilation of proven strategies and interventions designed to address a variety of traffic and safety concerns within the village. It serves as a practical guide, offering solutions that range from simple sign adjustments to more complex engineering changes. The creation of this toolbox was guided by both data-driven insights from the comprehensive traffic and crash analyses, as well as community input through the resident survey. By combining these elements, a toolbox was created that not only was effective, but also aligned with what residents said that they wanted and what their concerns were. The Traffic Calming Toolbox serves as a cornerstone for the village's traffic management strategy, providing a robust set of tools for improving road safety and optimizing traffic flow, all while enhancing the overall quality of life for residents. The process begins with either an internal initiation by staff seeing that there's a problem, or there's something initiated by the Traffic Safety Commission, or a resident provides an inquiry or comes to us with a problem that they're looking to solve. Each location, when it comes in, is analyzed based on recent crash history, which we always request from the police department. They provide the 5-year traffic accident data. We look at vehicle speed, average daily traffic, and then nearby pedestrian generators, including the school, library, park, church, or any public transit that may be near. Additional points will be awarded for locations that are identified in either the safe routes to school or the bike plan. So the primary purpose of traffic calming is to support the livability and vitality of residential and commercial areas through improvements in non-motorist safety, mobility, and comfort. These objectives are typically achieved by reducing vehicle speeds or volumes on a single street or a street network. These traffic calming measures consist of horizontal changes, vertical changes, lane narrowing, roadside, and other features that are not only like physical barriers, but they could just be as simple as like putting up feedback signs that are more psycho perception means to try to produce those desired results. So now in particular, data collection. So there are three things that drive a lot of our data collection when we look at our traffic calming toolbox. First is obviously the request from the police department of the last 5 years of accident history. The next two items are something that I'm actually quite proud of that we're able to do in-house now, is vehicle speed and average daily traffic. So in July, we purchased a little traffic monitoring device. So the idea of this device is, you know, generally, if you see the giant traffic trailer, it'll slow you down just by seeing the trailer say slow down or speed limit or whatever. So we don't want that to be our point of reference. We want to know how people are traveling when they don't know we're watching, because we want to know how they're behaving in a normal situation. Mm-hmm. So this traffic monitoring device gives us 85th percentile speed and gives us how much traffic is going through. It's a really cool tool that we put it out for 2 weeks and we collect our data and it gives us very nice reports. I would pass it around, but it's not very fancy. It's just a box. So it provides us 85th percentile speed, provides us speed histograms, so we actually know the speed distribution throughout the time of the day. It provides us average speed comparisons to determine traffic patterns, and its accuracy is within 0.4% for speed and 97% count accuracy. So I know I've been saying it a lot, and it's come up at a lot of the community meetings. 85th percentile speed. What is that? 85th percentile speed is the expected speed limit of the road. Seeing 85th percentile speeds significantly above the speed limit could indicate that the road condition does not reflect the posted speed limit. The 85th percentile speed is the speed at or below which 85% of the vehicles travel on that road. And that is the accepted most common method used to determine speed limits in the United States. So that's what we're following. So the other reason why this is such a valuable tool is before, or in general, in engineering terms, if we were to try to ask a professional engineering firm to go out and just get us traffic counts and give us the answer, it costs $2,000 to $4,000 each time to just collect that data. This cost us just north of $3,000. We've already used it 10 times and it just keeps working. So this was a great thing that we did. We also have monitoring devices on it, so nobody steals it. But this was a great asset for, and we just keep paying itself forward.
With that data, then we know the streets that are speeding or so that.
Correct. So the way, like I mentioned with data collection, the way it typically works is a resident would reach out to us and be like, hey, I think that we need to do something at this intersection. And we would be like, okay, like, what are you seeing? You know, that's typically how my conversations go. What are you seeing at this intersection? And then the person describes it to me. Then I say, ma'am, I will go put up a traffic monitor. We will wait for a couple weeks, and then I will get back to you and we'll go over the results together. And then at that point, I have the actual data in front of me, because oftentimes what happens is there's a big perception on what's going on. But if we actually have the data and we have the hard facts of what's going on, then when we discuss it, it's more of a, like, here's what I have, here's what I'm working with. So that's where this data-driven approach, but then also that you know, sense and what people are accepting of. Yeah. So now this is the part that did come from the traffic study, is an actual scoring matrix. So if you look closely at the scoring matrix, there is a point system, 0 to 100 points. For each one of these categories, there's an assigned amount of points based on data that was collected. So for crash history, you can get a certain amount of points based on just the crashes recorded over a five-year period in that area. There's a certain number of points that you can get for vehicle speed, vehicle volume, which is why this became critical, because all of a sudden it was like, well, we have this awesome tool, but we need to be able to collect this data to be able to actually put numbers in and provide a response. Then you have pedestrian traffic generators. You know, that's simple. We look at a map, see what the distances are from pedestrian traffic generators, bus routes, bike routes, and then community interest. One aspect of the Traffic Safety Commission that is, I guess, weighted here, and we do provide points for, is if there's a petition that comes along with it. If there's actual community interest in getting this done, there is something that comes through for that. And then
Okay, you get the points from 0 to 20. Who actually rates those points, or is it automatic once you start inputting the information? Is that part of this, for lack of better software, or is it, let's assume you're the one doing it, you're the one that says, oh, I'm going to give them 18 points.
So the way that we try to handle this is, before a Traffic Safety Commission meeting, I will do one, and each commissioner does one.
Okay.
And then we go over, well, why did you give this person 12 points? Why did you give this person 10?
Okay.
And we walk through justifying why it should be what. And we always go the conservative route, because if somebody went through the process of getting petitions and everything, we would go the conservative route and actually try to justify all the points we're giving them.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And then we have the improvement matrix. So based on the points provided, 0 to 100, the traffic study provided the improvement matrix, which you have level one improvements, which are very slight, a minor, no traffic flow changes, but just some visibility things. Level two, which are some traffic flow changes, level three, and then level four. And again, 0 to 100. And then on the side, you actually have primary issues addressed, whether it's speed, volume, or pedestrian safety. And then on the left here, the two pictures I provided, on the bottom, you have the 1500 block of Monroe, which was a level one, where really we only just, actually it's a level two, because we striped the parking lane to provide somewhat of a look or a feel or a change to the way traffic flows. And then the top picture is actually Lake Street on Franklin, where there's already curb extensions, which is considered a level three traffic flow change, which is a significant one. And one thing that I want to go over is an actual example of how this is really where we've seen that immediate impact. When we did the traffic analysis initially for the 1500 block of Monroe, we received an inquiry that there was excessive speeding on the 1500 block of Monroe. When the data was collected, it was confirmed that vehicles were traveling at an 85th percentile speed, 35 miles per hour, 10 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. Additionally, based on the other factors that contributed to it, you know, distance, where it was, crash history, other things, our scoring matrix determined that based on the conditions that we found, it warranted a level two traffic calming measure. So level two being parking lane striping, something to provide that level of calming. So what we did, we striped the parking lanes, which we see in the picture below on Monroe. That was this summer, early this summer. We striped it, and then actually, we were curious to see what the results were. Did it work? So we went back out, we put the traffic monitor back out there, this one, and we were able to find that the 85th percentile speed dropped from 35 to 29. So we saw a reduction of 6 miles per hour just by doing the striped parking lane. So that was a very nice way of showing, you know, we got the initial data, we went through the process, scored out a level two, we're able to put something in, an improvement. We went back out, reevaluated, and we saw an added result. So now after we get through the Traffic Safety Commission, they will review requests and vote on recommended changes. Typically, especially when it's a petition, it will go through that process. It'll come to the Traffic Safety Commission. They will vote whether or not they want to move forward. Any signage and striping changes, those are handled at a staff level because there's no code changes necessary. So if the Traffic Safety Commission votes to just add speed limit signs because it's an existing speed limit, they're not changing anything, then staff would just handle it. We wouldn't bring it up to the board level because all we're doing is adding signage for an existing measure. We're not changing anything. Proposed changes to traffic control. So like adding a stop sign is a big deal. It's a very big deal. Parking and roadway configurations are sent to the village board for review and for consideration. For example, when we did the Dominican parking, that was brought up to the village board for consideration. Does anybody have any questions about the process before we move on to projects? Okay. So now we'll move on to Washington Boulevard. That was one of the items the village received significant feedback that we had speeding along the corridor, and that was evaluated in the traffic study. So Washington Boulevard is a two-lane bidirectional major collector in the village of River Forest. Average daily traffic is 5,700 with a posted speed limit of 25 miles per hour. The village-wide traffic study reviewed Washington Boulevard in depth due to existing concerns. Volumes were gathered for peak hour times of three intersections, Thatcher, Lathrop, Franklin, and those intersections were chosen to get a good representation of the corridor. The average 85th percentile speed along Washington during the study, during all time periods, was 38 miles per hour, which is 13 miles per hour above the posted speed limit. So based on this analysis, right when we received the feedback, the village implemented immediate traffic calming measures in April of 2024 in the form of traffic delineators. So we have props today. So when we implemented those traffic calming delineators, those are meant to visually guide drivers and sort of already give you the perception that, hey, I should be slowing down. This isn't for an opportunity for me to try to jog around someone or get around someone. It really, you know, is well placed. So it helps them navigate road changes, thereby encouraging slower speeds and safer driving behavior. Essentially, they act as visual cues. So based on the results, similar to what happened on Monroe, we went back and reevaluated what was going on in Washington based on the implementation of the delineators. Based on that, we noted a drop in the 85th percentile speed of 7 miles per hour below the 2023 data. So we saw a significant drop just by implementing the delineators, which are temporary. This is a notable reduction. And honestly, it's a very good argument when we go for grants and do different things that this is something that we should be looking to do because of what it accomplished already. These delineators have provided traffic calming to the corridor while a long-term solution is established. Washington corridor improvements would provide a connection point, and this is the other added value, to the Thatcher bike trail in the future, and three local parks along the corridor. And I do know that there are a lot of children that cross at Franklin because I always do see that and hear that. So that is another significant reason why the whole corridor needs to be improved. This project currently, based on our recent estimates, so this year, is estimated completely, everything in, just below $1.8 million. That includes phase one preliminary engineering, phase two detailed engineering, and along with construction and construction engineering. If you may recall, we did come to the board for a funding resolution, like a support resolution for our ITEP, Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program grant application. That was submitted in September. We're hoping for a response here in the spring to see how we did. So hopefully we did well. That is Washington. Does anybody have any questions as to Washington? Hearing none, we'll move to the next. So for Thatcher. So Thatcher was also identified as an area of interest due to its imbalanced lane configuration and observed speeding during initial field assessments. The existing road is designed with an imbalanced lane configuration with two southbound lanes and one northbound lane. Center striping is provided throughout the corridor, with parking lanes striped on the east side of the road. The width of the road is approximately 41 feet, with three 11-foot lanes and one 8-foot parking lane. Looking closer at the 85th percentile speeds broken down by the consultants, we noticed that the northbound drivers, the 85th percentile was 38 miles per hour, and the southbound lane was southbound inside lane was 42 miles per hour, and the southbound outside lane was 44 miles per hour. So this could be indicative of that the unbalanced lane configuration makes drivers feel safe on the outbound lane, that they've got so much room to just go for it. Due to the severity of the speeding, the recommendation provided by the consultant was that, you know, there really needs to be a wholesale change throughout the corridor. This isn't something that can be just done spot. It's really something that needs to be changed throughout the corridor. So leading into the discussion, you know, a group of six municipalities and other local government entities have been meeting in a cooperative effort considering the improvement and development of more than 10 miles of the Des Plaines River Trail from Toohey Avenue and Park Ridge all the way to the Prairie Path in Forest Park. To date, Phase 1 engineering has been paid for by surface transportation program funds awarded by the North Central Conference of Mayors with a local match as required. The Village of Rosemont has been designated the lead agency because they're the lead agency with Phase 1 throughout the corridor for all of the other sections of the trail. This project is currently in Phase 1 engineering. They're actually doing additional traffic counts this week and next week to do their final Phase 1 submittal to IDOT. This project, we had a open house in October between 6 and 8 p.m., October 1st. The meeting was very well attended, 30 to 40 people. It was very nice. A lot of positive feedback, excitement, really, for the project. The purpose of this meeting was to present the proposed improvement plans and provide an opportunity for public comment. We received plenty of public comment. Attendees had the opportunity to review the exhibits, provide the feedback, and meet with village staff and the project team individually. Even after that meeting, there's been a number of occasions where there's been requests or just comments that I've received, and I've taken them in, provided any responses, but also sent it along to the design consultant to make sure that they keep that incorporated. For this particular project, we believe, and for any project, stakeholder involvement is critical to project success and will continue to be considered throughout the project development process. Refinements to the proposed improvements based on feedback gathered at the October meeting will be considered and coordinated with the village. We do believe, based on the scale and size of this improvement and how we're changing lane configuration and everything, we believe that it's going to be critical to do another open house and detailed design before we finally say, yes, let's go and start building, just because of how significant the changes are going to be. So we do plan on doing another open house when we get into Phase 2, which will likely be late 2025, early 2026, just because we are at this point submitting to IDOT the Phase 1 project development report.
Can you just remind me, is this project that is, you know, multiple municipalities, is it mainly for bike routes, or, and like that was the impetus of it, or is it like to really change the roads? Because one of my questions as you were talking was like, oh, I'm curious, like how what Park is doing on their, you know, on their side of like Thatcher Road is, right? Because they've got on one, you know, one side the Forest Preserve as well.
For sure. So initially, the way that the project came about, we already were internally looking at what could be done to Thatcher to try to traffic calm and do what we could individually as a municipality. And it ended up being that when they were looking at the whole 10-mile stretch of the trail, they looked at multiple options coming south along River Forest. They looked at potentially the railroad, potentially outside in Melrose Park. Yeah, Melrose Park going that way. Or our path. They looked at all the feasible options or even staying in the forest preserve. They looked at all of those potential options and what for the trail.
Yeah, that's to answer your question directly. Yes, that's what it started out with, just the trail.
Yeah. And then we saw the opportunity of not only does this address the trail and make the project very, very enticing for federal funding because of how it connects all of these communities and how much it connects, you know, not only the Prairie Trail, but then all the way up north to Tui. So it became really a good opportunity to do both.
Some of that funding, if I'm correct, came from the county, I believe.
Correct. Yeah. So yes, for sure. When you look at the northern portions, a lot of the different portions have been funded either through county grants. One of the big ones that we'll be going after as part of this is congestion mitigation grant. It's CMAQ. We'll be going after CMAQ grant funding from the Central Metropolitan Agency for Planning because they typically dole out the federal funds.
So, Jack, along the lines then what Eric was asking, if it's for biking, is that what they're gonna also look at the streets? I mean, who's going to look at, is IDOT looking at that? I guess I'm a little bit confused.
For the streets for this part of Thatcher?
Yeah, this part of Thatcher.
So as part of this part of Thatcher, one of the things that, because the whole phase one is going through not only, so the impetus was the actual trail itself. However, when we're going to IDOT and we're recommending, hey, look at what our data is showing us, we are okay with trying to narrow this and change the lane configuration. So we are going to IDOT and going through and requesting, hey, we want to do this. So it is, I guess, the bike path is coming in because of the project, but we see the value in putting in that bike path and changing the lane configuration as well.
I see.
Okay. So
it will slow down.
Cars.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, like Elmwood Park and all the other municipalities that aren't necessarily doing this part of it too, where they're changing their
streets.
Okay.
It's because that's how it's configured. They don't have, I mean, I don't know about Elmwood Park. That's a good question, but all the other ones kind of go under.
Yeah. Right? They have like little bridges and
along the trail, Erica. I mean,
they don't need it. That's kind of
need it. Exactly.
What I was trying to figure out.
That's a great question about Elmwood Park.
So that is, yeah. I will say the reason they cannot go into the forest preserve here, and this was something great that we learned as part of this process, is we have one of the highest quality forest preserves in all of Cook County. And so they do not want to do any type of improvement in there because they're very well preserved and they're a very high quality. So they don't want to touch it.
So we don't know what that means, but high quality.
High quality.
You're high quality. Okay. Yeah, somebody. All right. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. So, and our last discussion item is Lake Street. So, Lake Street is under IDOT jurisdiction from Harlem going west through Bloomingdale, what it turns into US 20. Lake Street east of Harlem is owned by Oak Park, City of Chicago, for their respective segments. Lake Street has a functional classification of a minor arterial, and really we're looking at 9,700 vehicles for average daily traffic. So roadway jurisdiction refers to which agency actually owns it or even maintains it. It may differ from the agency that maintains it. For example, in River Forest, we do have a maintenance agreement with IDOT where they pay us each year a certain amount of money to do like spot patching and just minor things to maintain the roadways. Other agencies that manage roadways in Illinois include obviously counties, municipalities, townships. For us, it's only IDOT or us. That's the only type of roadways that we have in River Forest. So what we are looking to do. So as I mentioned, Lake Street is under IDOT ownership and jurisdiction. There are, as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, there are existing curb extensions along the corridor. So at some point in the village's history, that went through IDOT approval to do those curb extensions. We know of them at Franklin, Keystone, Forest, at other areas throughout the village. In the short term, we can look to potentially add delineators or consider them at strategic locations. similar to Washington, to sort of create somewhat of a narrowed feel. But our next step, which is something that we are proposing as part of this draft budget and part of the CIP process, was to review particular intersections to see where we could potentially create curb extensions or potentially refuge islands through the permitting process, similar to Greenfield and Lemoyne, which we did at Harlem. That went through the permitting process. Does take some time, but we did get them.
So, Jack, when we do these type of extensions or enhancements, we then also become responsible for maintaining them or repairing them, et cetera?
For maintaining them, yes.
Okay. So, but the rest of the street, we don't. I mean,
for the rest
still,
of the, well,
that they still own?
Correct. So, okay. The value in their ownership is we get X amount of dollars right. each year. Because okay. they own it, they pay us based on the size of the street and everything. Okay. So there's a revenue that's generated, which then is put back into those roads, okay. which I don't want to – in the state of Illinois, they do have a cycle for replacement and repair. But us as a municipality, because we're the boots on the ground, we're here. We know what needs to get replaced. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's sort of difficult if you don't have that type of maintenance agreement. You don't know when IDOT's going to come in and do something.
Right. All right.
You then have to battle.
I just didn't know whether, and I'm hoping the answer is no, is that when we do these extensions, they're not kicking back or asking us to fund any of the repairs to the Lake Street that they own. We no. just take care of these extensions.
Correct. Okay. We would take okay. care of based on our agreement. So I know, for example, this year we had two patches that were near. One was near Thatcher and Lake Street, and then one was just west of that. And those were just patches we noticed. These need to get done. We did them. Otherwise, we wouldn't touch it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
For Lake Street and the past curb extensions that we did through IDOT, how long did it take for those applications to get through to the time where we put them in?
So the only one I can speak to is the Harlem, Greenfield, and Lemoyne, because those take, I would say you would go anywhere from 6 to 12 months through the IDOT, just to get to the point of designing the plans and going through the permitting process to get it back and be done, to get that permit to go for it. And that is, I would say, totally encompassing, right? Of going to get the consultant, doing the survey, developing the plans, putting in the permit, going through that process with IDOT, any design changes, and then getting final approval to go for it.
So it takes a year after we've decided that we want it, which is also another set of time, right, that can take a while.
What I would say is, so what I, as I mentioned a little bit, was we are planning in this CIP process or this process for this year. So I guess this is the way I have it laid out. Is this year we have the CIP and we have a certain amount budgeted to actually go and design these and go through the permitting process. My intention would be to effectuate those changes next year, to build them. That's my plan.
How much money do we get through IDOT for maintenance of Lake Street?
$17,000.
Okay.
Just north of that.
Okay.
Yearly.
So I know one thing that we've spoken about before, because IDOT has, from what you've mentioned in the past, a very high threshold for what they would approve. They have to see significant traffic accidents or something. And if they don't see it in whatever we provide them, they don't approve something. Where the community might feel that it's really important for there to be like signage, you know. So on Lake Street, signage where it has like this button where you press it and kids can cross a crosswalk, you know, going to Lincoln School or something and be safer. Or going to, you know, community members can go to Jewel, you know, right at that bus stop. And I think one of the things that you've said is that IDOT doesn't like to put those signs very close to each other. In Oak Park, we've seen that they can do that on streets that were formerly IDOT, but Oak Park has taken control of them. And I'm wondering, for River Forest, does it make sense for us to take control back of something like Lake Street so that we can one, not have to go through an IDOT process. And so if we decide, you know, it doesn't have to take a year necessarily. But just wondering considerations for that, you know, have you gone through thinking through that and have you come up with anything?
So I have initially thought about it and I've already sort of reached out just to get a temperature. But there hasn't been any deep discussions because part of the consideration when we talk about, I guess, would IDOT even look at potentially transferring? One thing to consider is you have Harlem and then you have First Avenue. So Lake Street is by nature a good connection for them, a corridor connection. So they do look at connectivity between their grid or their system. So that would be a point, and that would be something that we would have to look at. Another consideration would definitely be obviously long-term ownership. Because once you take that on, that 17,000 is gone. That's the initial part. That 17,000 a year is gone. And we are fully responsible for any and everything that goes on with that road. So there has been that initial take and just a high level approach. If that is something, I think that we would definitely have to do like a deep dive of like a financial, you know, clawback or how long or what that looks like long term to take on that asset slash liability.
Yeah. For me, that is something that is interesting enough to begin to look at that because I think about like the different accidents and deaths that we've had at Lake Street, the community outcry for things that feel simple, like, you know, signage or something, but that might have to take a year to go through.
I totally agree with that. I think the $17,000 is nothing. I mean, for us to control it, for us to make it more safe, for us to do more things that we want to do, to me, let's take it on. But I think the issue is I'm not quite sure how gracious IDOT is going to be with giving it up. But to your point, let's try. Let's see.
Well, let's try means we're going to look at it, right?
Right. So, oh, yeah. I'm not. You can't buy it.
There's 9,700 cars going in that day. I'm not sure what the safety, how much control and safety we're having. And I'm not saying not look at it. I'm just saying.
But Rez, we're going to have more traffic as you start like building on Lake. And I just think, there's opportunities for us to make it more safe. I really do. I mean, I hear you. I mean, it's a wish, but I'm sure that's going to say go pound sand.
And I'm not
saying
don't look at it.
I'm like, seriously, look at it. What I'm saying.
Seriously, look at it. I'm with you.
Yeah, I also think that from our conversation in the past, I understand First Avenue and Harlem, but they enjoy to taking roads off their rolls. You know, it's like they don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, and if Oak Park already has that on their side of Lake Street, that might be a plus in our direction as well.
Yeah, be it, huh?
Make it more money.
Right, exactly. Well, we'll give you more money. Or it'd be interesting to see how Oak Park got it. You know, go back
it'd be
to
interesting
the
to see what Park did. Have had by owning.
It could be home rule. You could be right, but I don't know.
Madison Street, what they've done with Madison Street, so interesting, so creative to try to, you know, stop. And they can do it because they've got all license to do it, you know. But things that I don't think we'd be able to do.
We should tell the story of North Avenue. I mean, that's another, you should finish, but North Avenue is just another story of IDOT.
That type of issue.
And our meeting with the, we're going to do the basics and that's it, you know.
At this point,
is that a bad story?
Tell
the story, okay.
I didn't think it was a good story.
I think part of the consideration here with the permanent route, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, is that, you know, it's been several years since I think the last time that we had looked for a real change was that rapid flashing beacon at Forest and Lake Street. It's been several years since we've tried to make a change on Lake Street. And I think what we were envisioning, subject to the review of all those intersections, are some changes that kind of already in place in terms of marking on those streets. If you drive down Lake Street, you'll see certain medians kind of striped out or narrow things that are striped, but people, it's just striping, so they'll just go over it, especially if it's faded, which happens a lot on Lake Street. The idea with some of the projects that we've at least been considering would be things that hopefully are more acceptable for IDOT to approve, things that are already within the existing framework of the street that would add a pedestrian median at a certain intersection that has significant crash data. I'm not sure we've made that argument or case in some time, and I think it's worth that shot to at least try. But we can collect some more information on the transfer process. I know those cases with Madison, at least with Madison Street, you know, that whole revitalization of their downtown there that came part of that, Lake Street, I think when they was a pedestrian mall, all that. So it's
like Madison Street in Oak Park.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they did the diet.
Right. And like Sugar Beet went into Oak Park, and when they put that grocery store in, they got a crosswalk and a sign where you can pause, you know, like that's a small grocery store, you know, like why don't we have that in River Forest? And it sounds like it's because of the IDOT process. And anything that we can remove as a barrier for safety that makes sense, I'd like to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Eric. I mean, if you're saying what you're saying, Matt, with we haven't really maybe addressed to IDOT all these things that may fit their model. Okay, let's do it. But if they're pushing back or if they're saying, hey, that's going to be 2 years, well,
I think that was kind of what we were thinking.
Our hope was to initially be able to sort of try to go this route, address some of those problematic intersections or crossings based on just what's there while providing that added level of protection. So like a refuge median or raised medians in certain areas where it's already striped, all we're doing is creating a natural barrier rather than it being striped. So that was our hope first, was just to go through that process to be able to just get those changes approved through IDOT. Because again, we're not changing the nature of the road in terms of like what its functionality is, except for changing like the visual cues, just changing some of the characteristics. That was our first step.
Yeah. See where it gets us.
That is all I had for that one.
Do you want to just briefly touch on North Avenue?
Yes. Yeah. So North Avenue, initially, North Avenue, IDOT is coming through with a major improvement that goes all the way to, it goes to North Lake, all the way through Oak Park to Chicago along North Avenue. They're doing a simple resurfacing project. As part of their resurfacing project, Elmwood Park and River Forest reached out to IDOT. Hey, you're doing a pretty significant project here. We would like to do some more improvements rather than just a strict resurfacing and spot sidewalk repair and some minor improvements. So we did end up, we were able to have a meeting with Secretary Osmond at the time to sort of express some of our concerns and see if we were to be able to do something. At the time, based on the conversations had, they could not wait. Based on the schedule of their roadway, based on the timing of their roadway, they could not wait to have our project potentially get through to approval for some of these pedestrian or different crossing improvements. So they wanted to go forward with just the resurfacing. But we also, in return with Elmwood Park, we applied for ITEP funding to be able to continue the preliminary design, detailed design to come through with some of those crossing or different improvements along the corridor. They were very supportive of that. And we did also, we co-sponsored a grant application for that project.
So we'll see. See what ITEP says. Okay. Very good. So a lot of going on.
Perfect. As I mentioned, this has been a topic that just continues to come up at community meetings. So this is an overview of just what our process is when an inquiry comes in and some of the, I like to call them blue chip projects that we have in the wings.
Yeah.
So.
It's a great overview. Cool. Thank you. Any further questions for Jack? No, great. Thank you so much. Jack. It was good. Very good. Mm-hmm. Gave us a great overview.
Right.
All right. We have no executive session, so we're ready to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Vote. He's getting there.
Trustee O'Connell. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
President Adusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.